Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fine Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent is Lieutenant Lee Riordan. Hi, Lee.
Hello.
Great to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you. Great to be here.
So you are, just to pull back the tent flap a little, you are currently recording all the way from Scotland. I don't know why I still find that amazing when I get to talk to people from four corners of the world. It's, you know, the technology's been with us for a long time, but I guess I'm a Luddite and I still feel like, wow, it's just kind of amazing. So now you're there for on like a research project and stuff. And so what I want to tie this into television, like what's the TV situation like in Scotland? Is it just like American television, or is it, you know, you get different channels, or what's the sitch?
Being on the younger side of things, I don't own a TV.
I sit here crumbling into dust.
No. It's just, you know, if you don't have the money for it, and I'm only here for a year. So no TV. Wow. And the streaming situation is real different. I was piggybacking on my friend's Hulu before this, but since my VPN changed, like my location, I no longer had access to MASH, and I had to, I had to pirate Goodbye Radar to catch up on it yesterday, because it just wasn't available where I'm at.
That's kind of what I didn't want to expressly say it like that, but that's kind of where I was headed with it. It was like, well, is MASH available to you in Scotland? So, okay, all right.
Okay. Yeah, I tried buying it first because, like, it wasn't that expensive. And I was like, in honor of MASHcast, I'm going to do things by the book.
Oh,
no. Had to pirate it.
It kind of fits with Klinger's having to finagle things in this episode, right? Having to cut some quarters. It sort of, you know, thematically, it all hangs together. So
yeah, thematically trying to do things like in a lawful manner.
Exactly.
And
right.
Into my like cool law breaking ways.
So, well, okay. Before we get to the episode in question, and it is a big one, we have to ask, since you haven't been on the show before, how did you become a fan of MASH in the first place?
In a shockingly internet-y sort of way. I'd had some vague familiarity with MASH as a concept because, just culturally, it's sure. Around, it's well known. But I actually ran across MASH first in, I think, 2021 or 2022 via a friend of the show, Vanya, Seafasters on Tumblr. They had cut together a bunch of clips of the show set to a Regina Spektor song, and I watched it and I thought, okay, you convinced me. You like talking about the show on your blog and this. Okay, you make a very good argument. And so I started watching it. And at the time, I was inking like a really intensely, like a work intensive comic. And so I was just sort of watching the show while doing like drudge work, like art-wise, and I got through a lot of it that way. And I also, this is also silly, I was already, I sent like anonymous messages to Vanya being like, hey, Spektor Anon, you convinced me to watch the show. This is what I thought. And I sent a couple of like missives that way before eventually unmasking myself after I'd finished up the show a few months later. So it's quite specific, but yeah, a very MASH blur sort of way.
That's fantastic. What Regina Spektor song was that was used for the meme?
What Might Have Been, it was called.
Okay. All right.
It was just, it's like a very sentimental song. After finishing up MASH, I went back to find it again to watch it through and had a good little cry just because, you know, it's like it's a very heartstring pulling sort of show.
Yeah, absolutely. No, so okay. No, you mentioned inking a comic book project. I mean, I went to art school and I did a lot of that, and I did some of it professionally.
Did.
Yeah. And so when you say inking, are you doing it old school, or are you doing it like all
old
on a tablet and stuff?
This one was old school, and actually, funnily enough, after finishing the comic, I sent it to the Massachusetts Independent Comics Expo, that's MICE, and won a print grant from it. So in a
That's
way, this is
fantastic.
the house that MASH built, because
That's
I'm also on this grant right now. It's a comics grant, like it is
Wow.
researching a history thing in Scotland and making a graphic novel about it. So in a way,
Wow.
this is all MASH's fault.
That's fantastic. That's great. Having spent many an hour on my art table inking things, being able to binge a show is definitely helpful as it just passes the time while you're hunched over your drawing table. So
Oh,
I've been there.
absolutely.
That's fantastic. That's great. That's super great. Wow, comics have changed that there are comic grants to send someone to Scotland for a year. That
I
was
mean,
not my experience growing up.
to be fair, this one wasn't a comic specific grant. This is not about MASH, so it's probably not terribly interesting and maybe cut. I don't know. But this one is an academic grant from my old college,
Okay.
that was a generalized art grant where you could pick what to do. So my pitch
Gotcha,
was,
gotcha.
do a graphic novel about the making of Frankenstein, essentially.
That sounds
Like,
fascinating. That
oh
sounds
yeah, it's
really
super
cool.
interesting. So far, it's mostly a Lord Byron hit piece. I'm sure I will like reach some sort of equilibrium. But right now, I'm just reading about all the horrible bullying behavior and like sexual impropriety. I'm sure I'll find some sort of equilibrium, like I said.
That's really cool. There's so much, geez,
Oh, thank you.
there's so much Frankenstein in the culture now. Because I mean, obviously there was by the time people hear this, it'll have been a couple of months ago. But the Benicio del,
Yeah.
not the Benicio del Toro, excuse me, the Guillermo del Toro
Yeah.
version was just out in theaters. And then maybe by the time people hear this, the Maggie Gyllenhaal Bride remake will be out in theaters because I think that's early in 2026. So it's kind of funny that it's, I mean, Frankenstein's never far from the culture, kind of like MASH, but
Oh,
even more
yeah.
so. But that's, you know, it's funny to think that we're getting a Frankenstein and a Bride of Frankenstein movies within like 6 months of each other. That's very
Oh,
unusual.
yeah, absolutely. No, I didn't. Funnily enough, I didn't actually know about the film till I was being invited to a screening in theaters, and I was like, oh shit. Oh gosh.
Very cool. Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Like I said, I have MASH, binge watching MASH back when it was on. I had my DVDs. I spent a lot of hours working on projects just because you want to put something on that runs for a long time. So you're not getting up if you don't have a remote. You know, you're just kind of letting it run. So that's awesome. So, well, that's the project that MASH built. That's fantastic. So,
I
well,
genuinely had no idea you were a cartoonist. I'll have to check out your work.
Well, it's been a long time, but yeah, I went to art school. I went to art school to learn to do comic books, and
Oh, wow.
going there taught me I didn't want to do comic books, so I got out of it. And God, this is boring for everybody, but it's my show. Whatever,
Oh,
who
I'm
cares?
sorry. Sorry.
No, I'm talking about my own self now, but because most of the people that have heard this know this story. But like, I went to art school to learn to do comics. I learned I didn't want to do comics, and then I got out and I became an illustrator for about 15 years. Not doing comic book related stuff, but like advertising art and things like that. And so then my life has sort of moved on from that, things like that. But yes, that's it all started with comic books and doing all that kind of stuff. So I know the ink stained fingers and all that stuff. I know all that experiences. So, well, all right, let's talk about this episode, which I mentioned is a big one. It's the season, it's episode 5 from season 8, Goodbye Radar, Part 2. The original air date, October 15th, 1979, written by Ken Levine and David Isaacs, and directed by Charles Dubin. So Radar begins packing to leave for the 477 to go home. Everyone is reacting differently. Winchester, for instance, barely cares. And Klinger is in a panic over becoming company clerk. Radar insists he can't help Klinger. He has to learn it on his own like he did. But when the lack of electricity really starts wearing everyone down, Radar changes his mind and steps in, helping Klinger find a generator. It still doesn't go well, and things get even worse when they hear the sound of incoming choppers. With no time to get a new generator, Radar gets a brainstorm. He lines up the compound with jeeps and ambulances, using their headlights to give the doctors enough light to work by. Potter, impressed, calls Radar a genuine hero. Later that night, after 10 hours of surgery, Potter and Radar talk in Potter's office. Potter once again commends Radar for his ingenuity, and Radar drops a bombshell. He's decided to stay at the 477th. Potter is stunned and demands that Radar reconsider. Radar gently remarks that Potter can't order him to leave, so as long as the 477th is in such trouble, he's needed more in Korea. The next morning, Hawkeye, having heard the news, angrily confronts Radar, demanding that he go home. Radar refuses, telling Hawkeye that no one can tell him how to run his life. Klinger, depressed at the news, is in the office when a call comes in about a generator meant for radar. He takes the call and hops in a Jeep to I-Corps to trade. The deal almost collapses when a blustery major arrives with the same generator, but Klinger bamboozles his way into getting it for himself. He drives back to the 47th with it, and everyone is thrilled. Radar in particular is impressed, and that gets him to change his mind about going home. The next day, everyone is about to kick off Radar's going away party, but it is interrupted by incoming wounded. That leaves everyone just a few moments to say goodbye. Potter is teary-eyed, Winchester condescending, Margaret cheery but impersonal. Klinger insists he'll make Radar proud, Father Mulcahy blesses him, and BJ seems more concerned with what Radar will say about him to Peg and Aaron Honeycutt, who will meet Radar when he arrives in San Francisco. Everyone then runs inside, leaving Radar without the chance to say goodbye to Hawkeye. Radar takes one last lap around the camp to the mess tent, visiting his animals, promising that everyone in the camp will be looking after them going forward. He wanders into the hospital where, through the door, he makes eye contact with Hawkeye. Hawkeye pauses for a moment, then gives him a classic army salute. Radar returns it when he hears the Jeep arrive. He gives Hawkeye one last look and then walks out. He loads his stuff into the Jeep and says, only partly to his driver, "I'm ready. Let's go." The Jeep drives off. Later that night, Hawkeye, BJ, and Potter go to the swamp for drinks, wondering just where Radar is at the moment. Inside, on Hawkeye's bunk, is Radar's teddy bear. Hawkeye picks it up, looks at it, and says, "Goodbye, Radar." All right, Lee, you requested, this was on your list of top three shows you wanted to talk about. So I'm kind of curious, before we get into the details of it, why this one in particular?
Yeah, it's a really intense episode, and I feel like it kind of typifies a lot of the like elements of MASH I found most fascinating. I feel as though this goodbye radar like bit is kind of a more purposeful retread of Trapper's goodbye earlier in the show, where you know, famously, like, you know, Henry dies, and that was like done quite on purpose. But to my understanding, Wayne Rogers left the show kind of abruptly and unexpectedly. And as a consequence of that, Trapper's exit from the show was also quite abrupt. Mm-hmm. And they wrote that in. They wrote that in to be like an incredibly moving and consequential element of MASH moving forward. And then since, oh my God, I'm blanking on his name all of a sudden. It's Gary Berghoff.
Gary,
right?
Berghoff, yes.
Mm-hmm. Gary Berghoff was tiring of playing an 18-year-old at his big age and wanted to move on. And so they started, you know, they sort of took the themes of like Trapper's goodbye and made it very purposeful by making almost everything about it too soon. Like, but on purpose, you know, like no one can say a proper goodbye, mm-hmm. because other things that are more important and more urgent come up. Mm-hmm. I think I said when I wrote to you something about it, you know, encapsulating themes of impermanence and how that's a major like thematic element. That's, I suppose, why I really wanted to talk about it, because MASH, a mobile army surgical hospital, like that part of it, it's impermanent.
Mm.
And that is part of the sort of abiding, like, tragedy of the piece, like, as a whole. Like, when we get onto GFA and, like, I imagine spoilers are, like, not encouraged to discuss, right?
I think everyone knows by now. I think we're okay.
Well, so much of that, like so much of that and so much of the like stuff leading up to it, it is about the difficulties of goodbye, the difficulties of, building deep, personal connections with people in terrible circumstances you want to end. But when the circumstances end, so does the relationship. That's so painful and so interesting. And Goodbye Radar feels like something where they really, really landed on it and like committed to it going forward. And I don't think that was necessarily something that they had necessarily done on purpose. I feel like it started with Trapper and Henry.
Mm-hmm.
And Radar was just another like very important point in that like emotional and thematic development.
Yeah, well, definitely one of the sub themes of the show is the idea that these people are in this situation, and of course they're not there under they're there not due to their own choice, but also they are buffeted by things around them that they can't control. And that, yeah, you can become very close to somebody, and then that person can be removed with virtually no notice, and you just have to deal with it. And
Yeah.
then you get the practicalities of it's a television show, and the show can't keep, referring to old characters because it's got to move on. But it never made it, you have to just kind of brush it away. It's like it never made a whole lot of sense that sort of like Hawkeye never got on the phone to track Trapper down, like in Boston, and be like, "Hey, dude, why did you do that to me?" Like you just, it's like Trapper's just dead. Like he's just gone,
Yeah.
and that doesn't make a whole ton of sense. They do have the capability to call people, as we know, and in fact, in a season 9 episode, we'll hear from Radar, right? We'll hear,
Yeah.
we'll hear from him, not directly, but we'll hear from him. So it's, but it's that's again, that's the nature of
In a way,
television
oh, sorry.
production.
It's the nature of television production, but also I feel like so much of that, the logistical barriers to reintroducing Wayne Rogers in some way, for example. It's kind of endemic to the premise in some of the writing, because it's it is so hard to get in touch with people, but also beyond that, it's I think one could justify that writing choice kind of by being it is really such a change. And it is that pain of Trapper leaving was so intense for Hawkeye, and he's so what is the word? They all want to go home so bad. So it's all of this these really complex feelings of shame and missing someone and envy, and also there's just that thing of a friendship like you have in a boiling pot can't exist in the same way. Again, with GFA, it's BJ says something along the lines of we can meet up with each other every so often, and Hawkeye's like, yeah, once or twice a year, a letter, and it peters off. It's just not the same. I could definitely see why someone in Hawkeye's position would cut himself off from a very dear friend just because of that context. I've actually seen it happen a lot with friends in difficult positions, cut off dear friends, not because of a lack of love between them or anything like that, but because it's just so painful, you know? So for me personally, I was like, yeah, that makes total sense.
And this, it's kind of funny. I mean, we can talk about when we get to the end, but it's had the show had if the show had lost another cast member in the seasons after this, it didn't, but if it had, I would have wondered what variation of the goodbye would they have come up with? Because I feel like with this episode, they've done every version, right? Trapper is the left with no warning, right? He's just gone. Henry literally gets to say goodbye but dies. Frank gets to say goodbye, and they get to say goodbye to him, but remotely. Like he leaves and he just goes for vacation and never comes back, but then they do get it. And Radar does get, everyone does get to say goodbye. I wondered, like, is there another spin on that format? I gotta wonder if, like, Father Mulcahy leaves in season 10, what other version is there left to do of getting rid of a character at that point? It's almost like it's perfect. They had those are the four, and then you're done. There's nothing left to do with it after that. So,
Yeah, absolutely. No, that does. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go.
no, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that is food for thought, because I hadn't thought about it in those terms, but that's a pretty fascinating way to think of it.
Yeah, they got lucky that everyone just stuck with the show until the end. We know that we do know that Loretta Swit tried to leave and wasn't able to. Who knows how that would have been handled? But
Oh, yeah.
thank goodness she did not. But yeah, so these are sort of, this is like the last version of how do we get rid of a character? Okay, I mean, when you think about it, Henry got one whole episode to himself. Trapper got nothing. Got 10 minutes of the first because he because as you just mentioned, Wayne Rogers chose to leave in between seasons.
But his
And
presence, or the lack of his presence, really haunts the show.
yes, they made it, they turned a minus into a plus. And
Oh,
then
absolutely.
with Frank Burns, they knew Larry Linville was leaving, but they didn't want to tip it. So they just sort of hinted at it, and then they had plans already in place. And so that, but this is even bigger. It's like two episodes. We're doing two whole episodes about the goodbye to this character. So the episode opens with a little recap because this was the first two-parter that was not the first hour-long show that was not broadcast as 1 hour. It was definitely broken up as two, part one, part two. MASH would do that later on with some part twos, but previously, it had just been 1 hour shows, and now they were like, no, we're breaking it. So, after a little recap of what part one, we open with part two, and it opens with a nice little moment. By the way, not to talk about this too much, but like Gary Berghoff is leaning over as he's looking in his old drawer, and we see he's got like a big bald spot, which is, underscoring he's not 18 years old. I mean, some 18-year-olds start getting bald spots, but not many. So, and it's
Yeah,
probably the only
I
time
mean,
you ever see him like that.
Radar is like so congenitally unlucky. I could really imagine that, like, it's
Yeah.
just like, yeah, just another like travail through
Yeah.
like the life of Walter O'Reilly,
Right.
who lives like Job.
He's going to be bald when he's 22 years old or something.
So
So
sad.
yeah, so he's looking into his a drawer full of stuff, and he finds the thermometer that was given to him, as we were just talking about, in the season three episode Abyssinia Henry, as a gift from Colonel Blake. And he mentions it, and it's a great little moment because he shows it to Klinger, and of course Klinger's familiar with what they're talking about, and he says, "Colonel Blake, give it to me just before he dot dot dot." And then the voice trails off, and Klinger jumps onto his proms, and it's a nice little moment, right? A reminder of that still kind of that still lingers, right, in Radar's mind. I mean, of course it does. Why wouldn't it? He was like his father, and his father died tragically. But it's just a great, a great little detail that I love that they thought of that, right? That somebody thought of that. They're like, oh, remember that? Remember that moment? And let's bring that back. I thought that was really nice. Now, Klinger, of course, trying to be sensitive, and he's like, "You've got your whole life to think about this stuff, but I'm in trouble here now." And he's really doing his best. And Radar is just not interested. He's completely lost in all his reveries. He finds the purple heart that Hawkeye gives him, and he says, "Hawkeye saluted me. Hawkeye never saluted anybody," which I guess nice, nice little
Foreshadowing, yeah.
foreshadowing of what's going to come. And then Klinger has, "I think I'm already on my own," right? And then even worse, they find the photo. He finds a photo of Uncle Ed, and Radar, it dawns on Radar that, through all this tumult, he hasn't even really had a chance to think about his Uncle Ed or mourn him or stuff like that. Again, Klinger tries hard to be sensitive, but he keeps saying about, "Look, you got to help me with this." And then it leads to this line where Radar's like, "Look, nobody taught me how to do this." And Klinger says, "You're a born clerk. I'm a born civilian." And I thought, the farm boy from Ottumwa, Iowa, is a born clerk? Since when is that a thing?
No, I mean, I see his point a little bit though, just because like it is like a real shift or whatever, because I mean, they talk about it in the next episode, how hard it is to conceptualize what Radar was before he was like an absurdly competent little clerk. Though they do talk like he was terrible, he was incompetent, the former clerk. What was his name? Radar O'Reilly or whatever. It's just it can be so hard when like you're getting into something new, even imagining that the person before you ever struggled.
Yeah. And then Radar, and Radar underscores that. He's like, "Hey, nobody taught me this job." I guess you could argue, as a farmhand, you have to be incredibly organized, because the crops have to be done and the cows have to be fed, and like you have, so I guess you could say, well, that's his brain work that way, of an organized brain, the way Klinger's did not. But I just thought it was funny that he was like, "You're a born clerk." I think, well, what evidence of that is there, Klinger? I don't know about that, but okay. Again, he's just feeling sorry for himself,
Oh, for
and so.
sure.
So then we go to the post-op, and there's more discussion of the Wangenstein contraption that BJ's patient is hooked up to, because they have to use
Oh,
this
yeah.
old school remedy because there's no electricity. It leads to a kind of strange, slightly awkward dialogue change where they're talking about the Wangenstein thing, and then it just goes right to Potter going, "You know, I'm going to miss Radar a lot." Like, there's no segue. It just turns, it's like they were like, "Oh yeah, let's transition out of the scene," and then that leads to a whole sequence that I never saw until I got the DVDs because it was cut in syndication, which is the extended conversation between Margaret and Winchester about
Oh,
Radar.
the Raggedy Andy thing.
Yeah. I never saw any of that till I got the
Oh,
DVDs.
wow. What do you think of that? Because like that one really sets the tone, I think, for Charles and Margaret's respective goodbyes.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about, right? We don't really, we outside of season six, where they were getting introduced to one another, we don't really get that many scenes of Margaret and Winchester just talking. That's they generally don't have scenes of just the two actors. And yeah, Margaret calling him a Raggedy Andy that she likes to kick around. It's very instructive about her personality.
Oh, very. And the way she like relates to Radar, certainly. There is like, I don't know, because it is simultaneously quite demeaning, but it does speak to this strange degree of fondness. And also, like, Radar is constantly being like correlated like with toys and stuff because he is just a kid. And I feel like interacting with Radar, some people, it matures them. Hawkeye takes on a much more mature older brother or sometimes even fatherly affect when handling Radar. Whereas I feel like with Margaret, it makes her seem more youthful because she just comes off like a bullying older sister figure.
Oh, yeah, there have been previous episodes where Margaret has treated Radar
Quite
incredibly poorly. I mean,
terribly.
really terribly. I mean, there's all that, there's that, thing that we all have lived with where you, if you're getting to know somebody and you see that they treat wait staff poorly, that's always a red flag, right? You're like, oh, I don't know
Oh,
about
yeah.
this person that treats people like that. And Margaret really does regard Radar. Now, I have to think what the show is here for is to like dig way deep into scenes that don't necessarily even warrant it, but what the hell? I've always figured that Margaret treats Radar poorly because I always felt like she thinks of Radar as part of the them gang. Like she looks at Radar as like part of Hawkeye and Trapper and kind of like non-military, non, you know what I mean? I'm sure she
Yeah,
doesn't treat the
absolutely.
rest of the corporals with that little respect. I think it's almost like she knows Radar is kind of like not on her side in a weird way, which is I think why she treats him that way. Maybe I'm giving her too much credit or something, but I always figured that that's in the earlier days where it was definitely an us versus them kind of mentality. I always figured she looked at Radar as kind of like that kind of thing. And then in the scene where Radar shows up and he complains about dealing with Klinger and stuff, Margaret plants a giant kiss on Radar's
Yeah.
face.
It's kind of sweet.
It
Like, I mean,
is.
the thing is with Margaret is I feel like the biggest hurdles with making her character sympathetic were those sort of like formative instances of like 'cause she was like with Frank, she's a jingoist. She's like obsessed with prestige. She's like quite unyielding and unfriendly, particularly with like people beneath her. They have to do a great deal of work to make you sympathize with and understand her perspective, like with the nurses episode later on. Was it literally called The Nurses, where like the people she's working under, like they talk, like the episode showcases the dynamic.
Well, there's
Is
the
that what
yeah,
you
the
can call it?
season five one is the nurses, and then there's the later one where she overhears the nurses talking about somebody being a hard ass, and she thinks they're talking about the woman that's above Margaret, and then she finds out they're talking about Margaret, and she's horrified that that's how they talk about her behind her back, because she doesn't want to be thought of that way, but she clearly is.
There's a lot of the show where like the universe kind of bends to Margaret a little in a way where like the show contends with the sexism that of the framing of Hot Lips Houlihan early on. But then, of course, I respect the fact that they never shy away from certain elements of her character they establish that are like that is just like formatively quite unpleasant and ideologically oppositional to the perspective of the show. Like she is a jingoist. She is very into prestige. Like she is quite mean. They don't change that really at all. They don't change it by being like she was never this way. They make her contend with it where it needs to be changed, or they learn ways, the writers, I mean, learn ways to love her for it. Anyways,
Yeah, she gets
which
well,
is, I think, part of this radar stuff.
she gets to
'Cause
be
like, yeah. Oh, sorry.
No, she gets to be a complete person. She gets to,
Yeah.
and I've mentioned this in previous episodes, is that because Margaret is the only female character of, any regular,
Yeah.
every story idea that the writers might have for a female character, Margaret has to undergo because there's nobody else to try it out on.
Oh, yeah.
There's seven other male characters, and you could try this and try that, and you could move, adjust here and there. But it's all Margaret has to kind of handle all of it because she's the
Yeah.
only one. So, and that helps make her a more rounded character. Yeah, she is a jingoist. Yeah, she is this. She is that. But she's also got a warmer side, which they're able to bring up. And again, she kisses
Yeah.
Radar. Radar looks at Winchester and goes, "Wow, Hot Lips,"
Yeah.
which I think I mentioned this in the Are You Now, Margaret episode earlier this season, where I thought, was well, is that the last time that the Hot Lips moniker gets mentioned? And if no, here it is right here. But this might truly be the last time we ever hear the phrase Hot Lips in any respect. Now, that, again, these scenes cut in syndication just don't stick in my memory the way the other ones do, because those are the ones I've seen 1,000 times. The DVD's not so much, but this might truly be. I'll probably be proved wrong in 3 episodes, and I'll go, damn it, but this might be the last time we actually hear Hot Lips. By the way, I should mention the when the final season of MASH came out and they did the toy line with the action figures, for some reason they thought that kids wanted to play
That's
with
nuts.
MASH action
That's
figures,
crazy.
which is an insane thing to think about. The kids wanted the action figure is called Hot Lips on the
Oh,
card.
that makes sense. That makes so
Which
much
is just
sense.
ridiculous, right? Like, that's not her name.
No, yeah.
She has a name. Come
She
on.
has articulated limbs and like how she can contend with institutional sexism. But on the other hand, it's just kind of crazy.
With fighting the
Really,
patriarchy action. Yeah,
yeah,
it's
MASH, or she'll uphold the patriarchy with one hand and fight it with the other because she's a complicated doll. Like, why? What kid would want MASH dolls? That's
I
crazy.
don't know. I mean, I loved MASH as much as any kid could have, and even I didn't get them. I was like, what am I gonna do
This
with these
hot guy
now?
breaks down in seven different regions.
Yeah,
Like,
yeah.
oh, it's crazy.
I will say though, the one that I have, because I have it on the card, and that's the one signed by Loretta Swit, like
So cool.
that's one of those items that, like, in the proverbial, if there's a fire in your house, like, what are the 5 things you grab outside of your family, obviously, what are the 5 things that you're grabbing before the fire? And that would be one of them, because it's obviously completely irreplaceable, so
Oh,
that's
100%.
yeah. So anyway, but yes, Hot Lips might be the last time we hear the phrase Hot Lips. And then we have a conversation with Winchester and Radar. Now, this I did see. So this is left in the syndicated version, and where Winchester's, looking, you must be excited, Corporal, going back to Haystacks, chawing tobacco, sitting around the silo, shooting the breeze with your bovine friends, Len Degoshin. That's the life. He's such a dick to Radar.
Yeah, he's the biggest jerk in the world. That's one thing I really love about Charles. He's definitely a more dynamic, like morally dynamic figure than Frank, but he
Oh
is
yeah.
no less of a jerk.
Just Len Degoshin, that's the life. He's being so
Oh,
sarcastic.
wow.
And Radar, I'm sure Radar's picking up on it, but he's also a little lost in his own problems. So he's probably like, whatever, Winchester's gonna be Winchester. What are you gonna
Oh,
do?
yeah.
And then Winchester talks about, you're basically leaving us without electricity. How do you feel about that? And that weighs on Radar, because then Klinger pops his head in and says, "Hey, there's a call," and Radar's like, "Well, you handle it," and Radar's kind of like, and he even says, "You see the coping I got to put up with," which makes Winchester kind of roll his eyes. Alvin on the phone, and then so when Winchester makes that comment, He kind of he sees it sort of preys on him a little. Then BJ asks Radar to help out with the Wangenstein thing, where they talk about that they got to repair the hoses, and then BJ makes another offhanded reference to there not being any electricity, but not in the way that Winchester did. It's more of an innocent kind of like, you know, this is rough. We're having to do this. So that inspires Radar to go take the call. We go in and we see that he is trying to wheel and deal, and Klinger is listening in. There's a great, he's like, and he says, "All I want is a lousy backup generator. I've already offered you everything, including some stuff I don't
I
got."
don't
It's
have.
just, I love that he tells him that, right? It's like, I don't
No,
even
it's
have.
really cute. No, I mean, one thing I've always really appreciated about MASH and about this episode in particular is this like continual sense of just always working on fumes with about half of the like stuff you actually need.
Yeah. That's fantastic. And then we hear him say, "You're crazy. Where in Korea am I going to get a frozen custard machine?" Which I love the two of them look at each other. What's a frozen custard machine? It's like, what the hell? And then he starts talking about that it gets pretty dark. And then, as if on cue, as if Radar's radar is still very good, we do hear choppers. And then I love the way Jamie Farr delivers. He just goes, "Oh no." I love the quiet way he says that, you know, just this kind of like they know this is the absolutely worst
The worst
possible thing.
possible time.
So then Radar gets the idea and he says, "Forget the generator, send all the jeeps and ambulances you can." And we lead to this scene where they bring everybody outside and working by the light of the headlights. I don't know if that would really work, really, but
Yeah, I have no idea, actually.
it feels like the light wouldn't get, you know, like the light has to be above you, not to the side of you, because it's not glaring down on the inside of the patient, but it makes for a nice visual to see everybody out on the compound lit by the headlights.
Yeah, no, it's incredibly surreal. I do wonder if like there might be some truth to it just because I have heard that certain anecdotes or plot points have been pulled from life. I think the most famous one being the anecdote Mulcahy relates in that one episode where there's
The
like a
interview,
documentary
yeah.
crew. Yeah, where he was talking about doctors warming themselves over the open intestines, like the heat of like bodies that are cutting into. I do wonder if something, obviously not precisely this, but something like this may have happened just because of but it is just as likely that that is not the case, of course, because like again the those like practical issues, like it doesn't seem like it would be a good replacement for overhead lights, like practically. But still, it is a fantastic visual, and I was always really in love with the surreality of it and like the cleverness of it, I suppose. It feels like a so much of like MASH has these strange little surreal tableaus, like Margaret in the wedding dress conducting wounded, or something like this. Like war generates so many strange instances that you just would never think of, just because you are so short on resources and time that you are stuck in these scenarios. And the tableau of the Jeeps is really valuable, even if it doesn't quite practically work.
We do. I mean, to be completely fair, we do see when there's the close up of radar of Hawkeye and Margaret operating. We see there's somebody standing behind them with a metal tray reflecting the light back down
Oh,
into the cavity of the patient. So
that's
maybe it would
clever.
work. You know, if you set up enough things, it might work. But again, it makes for an interesting visual. And you know, MASH's TV shows are generally not a visual director's medium, you know, because everything has to be the same over and over again. So it's probably nice just to be able to do something a little different, you know, just to get it something on an episode that you've probably never seen before. And I bet, like, if they ran a commercial for this episode, they probably use that clip just because it sticks out. You're like, well, what is
Oh,
that? What
big
are they?
time.
Why are they operating out on the compound? So they thank Radar for the engenuity, and they give him a round of applause. Then we cut back to Potter's office, and clearly it's the end of the shift. Potter's exhausted. We see that Radar has basically already filled out all the paperwork. He even says something about the patient reports, and he says they're already on your desk, already signed by you. Which is like, wait a minute, what? Does he sign Potter's name, or did Potter, did he just like have Potter sign a flurry of paperwork and Potter didn't know what he was signing and just, yeah, okay, it's already, I'm guessing that's more what that means. I don't think Radar is literally forging Colonel Potter's name on
I wouldn't
documents.
put it past him necessarily, just because, like when Henry was in place, the general
That's true. They
joke of
did
the
it there,
Radar
yeah.
Henry dynamic was that like Radar was basically handling everything.
Maybe so. Maybe so. There's a great episode of The West Wing when you find out that one of the president's secretaries, one of the various people that attend to him, had to get him to sign a document, and he got pulled away, and it needed to get done. And just in an interest of just getting it done, she signed his name. And
Oof.
one of the regulars, I think it was Leo, the president's chief of staff, said, "Well, you just performed a coup on the president of the United States." And it was sort of like, "Don't ever do that again." And it was just like,
Oh,
"Yeah,
wow.
that's kind of a big deal. You can't sign someone's name. That's really quite a big, that's forgery. It's really a big deal." So yeah, maybe, obviously here, as you just pointed out, things get loose when the resources are stretched the way they are here. So Potter says, after everybody gets some sleep, we are going to give you one hell of a goodbye soiree. And that's when Radar drops the bomb and he says, "I've decided to stay." And I love that Potter's immediate reaction is, "You've been sipping at this hooch?" Like, what are you talking about? And then, Radar explains it all. And there's a great little acting beat from Harry Morgan here where he is so frustrated with Radar. And then at one point, and he's got his hands, like he's like shaking his hands, and he says, "Radar, I appreciate your loyalty." And he puts this
Oof.
pause between "your" and "loyalty." And there's a thing where I feel like Potter is so mad, but he doesn't want to convey that. And so he's decided to frame it as loyalty. When I think what Hawkeye is going to come to think is it's ego. It's pure ego that Radar is like, "I'm so important that nobody can." I mean, good Lord, this unit could replace Trapper and could replace Henry and could replace, well, maybe not Frank, but replace lots of people, replace lots of people and continue to thrive. But Radar is too important. And I think that the pause that Harry Morgan puts in those words, I think speaks volumes that it's, "I don't want to yell at this kid because A, I don't want to yell at him, and B, it'll probably be counterproductive." But that pause to me suggests a kind of real frustration where he's trying to very carefully choose his words.
Yeah, no, I mean, the stuff is really complicated in that, again, he's getting to go home. Everyone's jealous, but it's a hardship. What was it? A hardship? There
A
was a
hardship,
specific word
yeah,
for it.
hardship discharge.
A hardship discharge. He lost his uncle Ed, who he has constantly referenced up to this point, all the time. This part of the dynamic is he's a kid, and he's not just a kid. He's a kid who has lost his only remaining father figure,
Yeah.
which is so much of this episode, because this is him going to his respective father figures. I'm including Margaret Houlihan in this, and saying goodbye. He has to say goodbye to every single one, every single one. This is the definitive end of his childhood. And it did end too soon. He's what, 18 or 19 or something. So he's he's the kid. And so this thing here, everyone simultaneously, what is it? The stakes are so high, they need to be quite hard with him, but no one wants to be, because he's a kid, because he's leaving, because he's leaving. to deal with like his family being taken apart. Yeah, it's just, yeah, I also really enjoy that acting moment.
Yeah.
Loyalty.
Yeah, just again, it's that, you know, not to get on a side thing about the, cuz, you know, whatever. But like we're hearing all these things about like, oh, AI is going to replace actors and all this stuff, and you know, I think that is probably coming for a lot of really bad entertainment. Like for stuff that's crap, will just get replaced by AI and it'll remain crap. But I think about something like that, right? Where that is a human choice that I'm guarantee was not in the script. I don't know that for a fact, but I would bet the rent that that is not in the script. That is a human moment that Harry Morgan thought of either in right at that moment or well, as he read the script. Thought about it, but that's something that a computer is just not going to be able to replicate because a computer doesn't have any human experience to draw upon. It's everything that Harry Morgan as a person and playing Colonel Potter as a character has come to that point of saying, I don't, you know, I'm so mad at you that I don't even want to convey it because it's going to alter the tone of this. And of course, in a few moments, he's going to get even madder when Radar doesn't give in. And he says, I want your keister on that plane the day after tomorrow. Like that point, he's mad. But just that pause is something that only a real person is going to. I don't mean to enlarge this to be, this is the greatest acting moment in the history of MASH. But it's just, it's something that only a real live human being is going to think to do. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, and it adds to it. And then I like that when it gets a little heated, I like that Radar says, sir, with all due respect to your colonelness, you can't order me to go, which I'm like, he can't? Like, I don't think that he could. I don't, you know, I mean, I'm sure that Radar looked into it before he decided to do that. But that seems kind of funny that, like, I would think that a colonel of the unit could say, no, you are leaving. That's the end of it. That's the end. You know what I mean? But I don't know. Maybe so. Maybe he can't. And, you know, Potter says, you're not using your head. And Radar's like, I have my places here. And that's, and then Colonel Potter's about to take another drink and then stops himself. And it is like, what? Okay. All right. And now it's interesting that they cut right to, I guess, you know, I mean, they've only got so much time, but like they cut right to the next morning where clearly Hawkeye has been told, and he decides to take a very different tack, of course, because he comes in hot. He's just screaming at Radar. I like that he makes no effort to talk him into anything or make him see his side of it. It's just pure screaming.
And no, it's even really fantastic.
He even calls him a jackass at one point.
I mean, I think it speaks to like a, like, you know, for as much as like Potter and Hawkeye are often on the same side and relate to each other very strongly, they do have a very foundational difference of opinion when it comes to like the army. And like that difference of like framework is so profound. Like, I think that's part of why, like, among other reasons why, like, Hawkeye lets out like right away, because it flatly doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
that Radar would stay. Like, it is kind of, it's not merely that it is a terrible idea. It kind of is something that structurally on a rational level is like, it doesn't make sense. It's illogical. It shakes his like actual perspective.
Yep.
Like, it is such a huge mistake.
Yeah. And it is insulting. It is, right? Because that's the thing that everyone in this unit wants more than anything else, is to go home and to have someone say, I'm choosing not to. You are like, what the F are you talking about? You know? And so I just like that Radar, that is very a Hawkeye kind of thing, to not try and have a conversation. It's just coming in and literally grabbing Radar's clothes and stuffing them back in his suitcase and stuff like that. And then there's this weird moment that doesn't, dialogue wise, doesn't make any sense to me, where they're doing like a tug of war with the clothes. And of course it hurts Hawkeye's finger because it's still bandaged, and he kind of yells out in pain. And Radar goes, oh yeah, you with your hurt finger, you'd stay. That never made any sense to me. I'm like, what are you talking about? Now, it's interesting that let's say that ever happened to Hawkeye. He got orders to leave. Would he leave? Of course he would. But would it be an incredibly painful, sour thing knowing that your best friend is stuck there behind you? Yeah, it would. It would leave a really bad taste in your mouth, but you'd still do it. But that line
Yeah,
never
of
made any
course.
sense to me that Radar thinks that Hawkeye would stay. That Hawkeye would be on the first chopper out.
No, I mean, I think that, like, I do actually kind of like that moment specifically because I think it speaks to something that they've touched on before, which is that Radar idealizes Hawkeye in particular and builds him up at times to be a sort of ideal of positive, like masculinity and like moral behavior that sometimes Hawkeye doesn't live up to, either because he's flawed or because he's simply not that way, or the world just doesn't work that way. Like, and you know, also like in arguments like this, sometimes you say stuff that just doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's also hard to argue. Like, if I remember correctly, Hawkeye doesn't have a huge amount to say to like the you would stay thing, because of course he wouldn't. But it's also quite hard to disabuse someone of that notion when there you are with the injured finger sticking around. But like, you know, it is such a different thing. Personally, I do like that dialogue because I think it speaks to Radar's naivete.
Yeah, that's true. Right. It doesn't make a lot of sense to, but it doesn't have to. It's there. It's a heated argument, and Radar's looking for any sort of any sort of counter. And then Hawkeye tries to pull out the big gun, saying, "What about your family? You know, what about, you know, have you forgotten about your responsibilities to your home, to your mother?" And that, of course, gets the maddest you've ever seen Radar, where he's turned and his teeth are gritted, and he's like, "Listen, how I take care of my mom is my business. You said it yourself, Hawkeye. No one should tell anyone how to run their own life." And it's and he unloads the bag, and that's the act break of the episode.
It's really intense.
Yeah, I mean they got mad at each other during the Fallen Idol episode, but this is that in a different way. And then so when we come back and we get a great laugh, one of my favorite lines where Klinger is trying to file and he says, "Why is he staying? Because then I'm an idiot." And then he's like, "Why don't we make everybody happy? Let the hero stay. Let the idiot go home." That is unassailable logic, right? But
No, it's very funny, but like it's also like I feel like this episode is also kind of a turning point for Klinger because it feels like the first time he's ruffled, the first time failing at a task the army has given him actually bothers him. It's kind of how bad workplaces get you because you become emotionally attached to your like your coworkers. Then a failure punishes them. Like, I think he's really feeling it, and he goes on to feel it quite intensely in like subsequent e episodes.
Yeah, he doesn't. Yeah, he as much as he is a con artist and a finagler, and he's tried to parachute out of the unit grab a hang glider and look like a big yellow bird with fuzzy pink feet and all that stuff. But when on the job, he wants to be good at his job, whether he's a corpsman or whatever. And so, yeah, it is bothering him. Now, we do see why he might not be good at it, as he's filing papers. He's literally just throwing them in the filing cabinet. And it takes just as much time to put something back in a filing cabinet the correct way as it does throwing it in kind of like at 90 degrees. It's a clinger. Maybe just apply a half second more effort. It wouldn't be so bad, you know, but okay, whatever. It's he's learning. He's learning on the job.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like I do something I rather like about this episode is how it balances that sense of replaceability with Radar because, like, again, so much of this in the previous episode really, really like hammer home how little he is valued just generally. But at the same time, he is so crucial to the running of the camp. The instant he's gone, everything falls to shit. Everyone misses him terribly. Everyone's like, you know, I mean, I really like how they balance that because it is a job that, despite its idiosyncrasies, despite long periods of inactivity. It is quite necessary to the running of the camp, and it is actually quite hard to do. Yet at the same time, the position, it's endemic to the position that you are not valued, you are not respected. I don't know. So it is interesting to see. And like, I think Klinger is a great person to put this pressure on. Like, think about his background. He is not the most educated guy, and he's very accustomed to like, pulling schemes and that sort of thing. But this sort of like highly organized thing with like a lot of oversight is just not his area at all. And for a guy who is like consistently this confident, to feel insecure in like a very overt way, it really does hit. You do feel, or I felt quite bad for him.
I mean, it's right. Imagine knowing that you getting good at your job could, or not being good at your job could lead to people being killed, dying. That's an enormous amount of pressure to be put on, and having to learn this form is for this and this form is for that. And we have all heard about, dealing with military bureaucracy is just like a thicket of red tape, and learning how to where to cut corners and what gets you where and all this kind of stuff. It's just kind of amazing. So yeah, you do. Yeah, it's again, it's a wonderful performance by Jamie Farr, despite these episodes being about Gary Berghoff. Of course, Jamie Farr gets a lot to do, and so he gets a phone call, and it's a phone call for radar about getting a generator, and he realizes, hey, I can handle this. I could take this. And he even says, Hondo McKee, great name. And he said, and then he says, Hondo, pal, I can do business with you. So then we cut to I-Corps, and Klinger is bringing some cognac. And then there's the line, he's like, where did you get it? He's like, don't ask, or whatever. He said, because obviously he stole it from Winchester. We meet one of the guest stars in this episode. The guy, Hondo McKee, is played by an actor named Whitney Rideback, I don't know exactly say that. Born 1945, passed away just last year. He was on a lot of TV shows, Simon and Simon, Buck Rogers, Scrubs. He's in Rocky II, The Battle Beyond the Stars, which is the sort of Star Wars Magnificent Seven mashup that I saw in the theater when I was a small child. And they have this deal. Oh, it's scotch, it's not cognac. And then he says, where did you get it? Don't ask. And he says, it's the code of the desert. And he realized, okay, they're going to make this deal. And just as the deal is about to be struck, here comes trouble in the form of Major George Van Kirk, played by actor Lee Debrue. He of one
Great
of the g
name.
great name. He of one of the great mustaches in television. It gets one of those mustaches and sort of calls attention to itself. It's a fantastic performance by this actor, the way he kind of barks, McKee, he's like this really great blustery guy. He had quite a career. In fact, Mr. DeBru is still around. He's been in a lot of great movies. He was in RoboCop. He's in the horror movie Pumpkinhead, which is a particular favorite of my wife's. He's in my wife, not wives. I don't have two wives. He's in Chinatown. He was in Norma Rae. He was in The Terminal Man. He's in a really underrated, terrific Paul Newman movie called Sometimes a Great Notion. So, really, a really great career. He demands the generator. We hear Klinger speak in Arabic, where he goes, "Gelb," which is I learned
Yeah, what's
is
that
translated to "son of a dog," is what that
mean?
means. And I
Wow.
love the way he says it. I loved it. It rolls off the tongue very beautifully, the way he says "Gelb." It makes me kind of want to learn Arabic. I'm not going to because I'm lazy, but it's really and then. Major Van Kirk is demanding that he gets the generator, and Hondo McKee, of course, folds, and he's like, "Of course, sir, we've been holding it here for you," completely obviating the deal that he just made with Klinger. And then to make things worse, we hear Van Kirk say, "I hope so, because we're down to a puny backup generator, and we had to swipe that from a mash."
Oh God.
And we hear that Van Kirk is like from, he's not from a medical unit, so it's like clearly you guys, what are you guys are doing is not as important as a match, and yet they swiped it from a match. Terrible.
I mean, throughout this episode, like, again, there's this like constant like thread of like Brass being real assholes, which of course is like a thing in MASH, but like probably you discussed about part one of Goodbye Radar, how like initially he was missing his flight because the general wanted to transport a cardboard cutout of himself as an
Of his
early Christmas
troops.
present to the, yeah. And they're like, it's not Christmas. It's not anywhere near Christmas. And it's like, when you're a general, it's Christmas whenever you say.
Right. The whole scene is so terrific. The guy, again, I love the performance of this guy.
Oh, stunning.
And then they go in to make the deal, and he says, I damn well better get my dinner. I've had two swiped here already. And then we get to Jamie Farr doing a great imitation of the guy going, lousy commies. I've had two swiped here already. And then we hear him say, do I hear three? And in the syndicated version, this cuts right to Klinger bringing the generator back to the unit. So, but instead, we get a whole scene here with the supply clerk, which again, cut in syndication, with the supply clerk reading a comic book. I'm always fascinated as the comic book props in MASH. Famously, Radar has an issue of the Avengers, as it has an issue of Spider-Man, even though both those comics were not published in the 1950s.
For shame, for shame.
The Fox prop department had some old comics lying
Yeah, for
around, and they
sure.
just went and grabbed them. I can't quite tell what comic book this guy's reading, because we never get a close up of it. But he's sitting there. He's got his boots off, his feet up. He's not working at all. And then Klinger is trying to pretend that he is there to get the actual. He's the one to get the generator. The actor is named David Dozier. He really has no other credits other than MASH. This is his second of three MASHes that he's going to do, kind of always playing supply clerks and stuff like that. Over Klinger's shoulder is a sign that says, nothing issued without requisition, which obviously is something that is a problem in the supply chain, that sign needs to be put up. To remind people that it absolutely, but of course, that's exactly the thing that Klinger is going to do. He's going to bullshit his way through this, and which is, in fact, he does. And the guy even says, I'll check with Hondo. And then Klinger says, go ahead and do that. Major Van Kirk could chew the two of you out and not miss a bite. And he just intimidates the guy into giving in. And then that's going to cut to Klinger driving it back to the 477. So he's getting the handle of the job, he's knowing how to work the system.
Yeah, no, they the big like some of the big lifts in this episode is one demonstrating like why radar is uniquely important, but two, why Klinger is going to bring something valuable to that position. They do a really good job of it.
Yeah, I'm kind of amazed when you see the generator. How did Klinger even get that by himself? That thing looks like it weighs 500 pounds. Like, I don't even know how he got it. Like, I don't even know how he did it. But okay, whatever. And then Radar is impressed, and Klinger says, "Oh, don't, it was just a, it's a, it was a thing. It was a deal that you opened, and I just closed it, and everyone's very happy." And then we see the Wangenstein thing has been taken down, because now it's got some electric power, so that patient's going to be fine. Then we cut to Potter's office, and Radar is sitting in Potter's chair in front of Potter, which is sweet, right? It's a sweet little bit of blocking that Potter is letting him sit behind his desk. And they have some booze, and Potter tries to say, look, you got to make sure you know I'm awfully fond of you, but you need to leave. And then Radar says, no, you're right. Klinger's got the hang of the job. I'm going to leave. And Potter says, well, that's great. And then Radar says, but I really liked your speech, though. And it's a very sweet, it's a nice little moment between the two of them. And then we have another nice moment where it's the next morning, where Radar is in his dress uniform. Hawkeye comes in and makes an announcement on the radio. By the way, he operates the loudspeaker with ease. We see how good Hawkeye has become at this. He just goes flick, 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 and turns it on. And he's doing this little sarcastic thing where he's asking Radar, who of course is right in the room with him, to report to his going away party before it kind of gets out of hand and everybody gets so drunk. And Radar, before Hawkeye parts, Radar says, "Before we're together with everyone," Hawkeye cuts him off and says, "No, not till I've had a couple of bowls of punch." And of course, they're going to regret that decision. And then we see Hawkeye leave, walks out of the frame. Radar's there by himself. And then we hear choppers. And.
Well, I mean, like, I feel like perhaps this was just me, but I felt like, well, you know, the thing, it's radar. I feel like you see him react and then you hear the
I think
choppers.
he does. Yes. I think his head turns like a half second before. And then there's a great cut where we see that we cut out to the compound and Radar comes running out to grab Hawkeye. And Hawkeye's just staring off into the heavens, looking horrified. And he says, "I hear them." And he tries to shake Hawkeye's hand. Hawkeye wanders off for a second. Then they try and do a little goodbye. And Radar says, "I'll find you, Hawkeye." And there's this great little bit of physical act, a little physical bit where we see Radar kind of clench his fist and grit his teeth a little and kind of be like, "Damn it," because he knows that his goodbye is about to be ruined. And so it's a terrific setup, right? It's a terrific setup to, we're going to have this great big goodbye. No, we're not. No, we're not. And once again, the impermanence of that you were talking about, the impermanence of all this is that the guy can't even get a half an hour goodbye party without choppers coming in and ruining everything.
I mean, it was like that was like the thing, like the thread throughout all of Goodbye Radar, because like beforehand, it's like didn't get his flight, didn't get his long talk with Patty, couldn't even give his gift of perfume because it got broken,
Yep.
got kicked out of the like truck. Like it's all of these like things set in place, like the cogs have been polished to a shine and they're still misaligned. Everything's off.
Radar is really is like Job kind of in this episode. It's just nothing goes right.
In that he is God's favorite.
And right, you think about that, he does get to go home, but in a way he would not have wanted. It's
Well, and
right.
also, like, one thing that I really appreciate, and this is going to sound weird, but I love how consistently cruel the show is to Radar. Like, because when he goes home, you don't hear a lot from him, but what you hear is never good. It's always like they're really struggling at the farm. The crop isn't coming in right, and like he lost a lot of money, and he's like picked up like some menial job at like a I don't know, a general store or something. He doesn't sound happy
No.
again, like and that's horrible because Radar's the sweetest, and he is just simply the best, and you want the best for him. But I like that the show never really beats around the bush about how it is to be poor. It never like gives him like oh, I was digging the field one day and I accidentally hit some sort of like oil main and now we're
Right.
rich. Like
Right. Yeah.
that wouldn't feel right. The thing about like him and about a lot of people is that life is a horrible struggle, especially for someone like Radar. I kind of love that because I feel like the show finds the strength to love him despite his terrible luck, and it never yields. By giving him something the audience all wants for him, it never lets him catch a break. It loves him anyways. I really love that.
It's the show does not shy away from being poor is tough anywhere, but being poor in America is extra tough because it's this country's extra cruel to its poor people. And the show doesn't, it doesn't underline it too hard, but it does suggest that yeah, Radar's troubles do not end just because he gets to go home, as again we'll learn in a later season. And we'll even learn when we see Radar again, but we'll talk about that in a moment. So we get the series of goodbyes now, where Potter is kind of teary-eyed and says, "This isn't the way I wanted to say goodbye, Radar." And he just says, "Godspeed, son." And they embrace, and that's it for their goodbye. Radar's kind of wandering the compound, and we see there's this activity. It's well staged by Charles Dubin. Of course, it was done like 1,000 mashes at this point. But I kind of like that Radar is in the back part of the frame, and we see all the chaos going on in front, and some people are running in front of them, and the dialogue is all recorded on the the location, so it's a little muffled, which gives it to me some verisimilitude. And then Klinger stumbles upon him, and he shakes his hand. And he says thanks, and Klinger gives him his clipboard, and he says that's for you. And then Klinger says that did it. I'll make you proud of me. And then someone yells for Klinger, and he has to run. He's wandering, and then he leans down to go say goodbye to Winchester, and then he's stopped by Father Mulcahy, who says God bless you. And you know, it's so funny how movies and television are put together like puzzles, because all of this whole final part of the show is shot on location. You can see they're actually out there in the open air on the location, except for the two close-ups of Father Mulcahy saying, God bless you. And then we cut back to radar going, thank you, Father, and thank God too. And you could tell by the lighting, that's clearly on the set. And I think about that, like, I guess they didn't get those close-ups when they were doing the location shooting, and then they had to go back. And I thought, what a weird thing to kind of like shoot your final scenes and then have them say, no, you got to come back just to shoot literally one line. Just how discordant that is. And if you're an obsessive fan, you notice that it's like, oh, wait a minute, they're not on a location. It's just such a weird, I would think as an actor, that's got to be tough to kind of bring yourself back to that moment of like, that feeling you had of, oh, can you recreate that again for one line for the 10 minutes we're going to shoot this? It's very strange. Mulcahy gives him a blessing, and then Radar says goodbye to Winchester. Winchester says, I wish you all your luck in your bucolic endeavors. And of course, Radar has no idea what that means, and he says, and the same to you, sir. And Winchester goes, chuckles, and he says, thank you, Walter, which again, being sarcastic, but it's about as nice as he's possibly going to be. And then BJ stops him, and all BJ talks about is Erin and Peg. He really barely says goodbye to Radar, which of course is a nice foreshadow to what we're
Yeah.
going to see in the
Knowing
next
what you're going to
episode.
hear about next
Knowing
time,
what's
yeah.
going, knowing what's coming, he gives them a kiss on each cheek. That's for Peg. That's for Erin. And then he just kind of tosses off a little, take care, pal. So long. Like, he
I
really
was
just.
going insane. I was like, give him another kiss for him. My goodness.
It's like, wow, Beach. Like,
I mean, I think like probably you have heard like I mean you have a lot of people coming in from Mash Blur. You probably have heard a lot of people talk over like BJ's a great guy, but he is also curiously selfish, like in this way, wherein like his status as a family man does take precedence in a lot of situations where it really shouldn't. Like it again, so much of this episode is like time allotted or that should be allotted to Walter is not given to him. And this is just another one of those instances where the no one really gets a chance to prepare much how they're gonna say goodbye, and much of it isn't really tailored to him. All BJ can think of in this moment is Erin and Peg. That's what's the most important thing to him, which is fair, maybe, but no, it's
Yeah,
unfair to Radar.
it really is. It's like, Peach, come on, man. What are you doing? I'm sorry, I did forget to mention in between
Yeah.
Potter and Klinger is Margaret,
Yes.
and she clearly doesn't know what to say, and she just says, you're okay. And it kind of reminds
I'm
me of the thing.
obsessed.
It kind of reminds me of the thing you say to a coworker when they're leaving and you don't know, you haven't known them at all, and you just kind of come up with some bromide because it's really not very personalized.
I mean, that's the thing. I'm actually kind of obsessed with her goodbye. She, like, because the thing is, it is so important to her to say a goodbye. She's saying it while running backwards, but she can't think of anything to say, anything at all. And so what she's come up with is, you're all right, you're all right. I think about that a lot because I talked a little bit about Mash's tendency towards building these surreal tableaus that you look at them and you can almost see them in the mind's eye of the people remembering them, like years on, where they're recalling the war. But Mash is also curiously good at building incredibly lived-in, realistic tableaus, and this is one of them. When I think about Radar reflecting on the war, I wonder if he thinks on that particular image of this person who had been quite formative to the camp and his experience, running backwards, not knowing what to say, but knowing saying something is so important. I don't know why, but it really struck me. I really love it. And it does feel so Margaret. It's so much more important to be focusing on what's happening. But it's also really important to say goodbye to this person who had been so formative to the camp too. Walter is like a regular element of that camp. He's a very important cog in that machine, but it does have to go on without him.
Yep.
And I feel like that Margaret goodbye is a really good sort of visual and like dialogue encapsulation of like, it's so important that you're leaving, but also goodbye. You know, this other, like there are lives on the line. So I should have prepared something, but I didn't because this is the like 17th hour of my shift and we were never all that close. It's just that you're the most, like you're very important to me, but we're not that close. So
right. I've got my hand in a sucking chest wound. I'm running backwards. I'm whole. I got a lot of stuff on my mind.
I'm a 36 year old woman, and you are like an 18 year old farm boy. We have nothing in common, or whatever. I don't know how old she is. 36 is probably way overshooting. Sorry.
I think that's probably about right. I think something like that. So, so after BJ takes off, we hear kind of all the sound disappear. We do a wide shot and we see that now the camp is eerily quiet because everyone is inside working and Radar is just standing there all alone. And, you know, of course, what exact when the his ride is not there yet. So it is a little like, well, now what do I do? You know, I mean, like he's not going to help with surgery. He's not going to like, you know, grab blood or whatever, but it's like there's the camp's empty basically. And so it is a little like, oh, I'm just going to stand around and kind of do nothing, which is very, very awkward. And then we get this shot of everybody working and things like that. And we see that it's very, very busy. Hawkeye Radar goes into the mess tent. We see that there's a We Love You Radar banner. There's a cake. He takes a swig of it and realizes it tastes awful. Because I'm sure it does. I'm sure it just tastes like garbage. There is the nice moment with him and the animals, which I'm really glad they took the time to include. I don't think we have seen Radar's menagerie since season 6 when Winchester, the Dr. Winchester, Mr. Hyde episode.
Oh, yeah.
But I love that.
Drug this... Miss Daisy. Wait,
yeah,
Miss Daisy,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. But I like that they brought this back. He mentions that everyone's going to be taking care of you, which, you know, that doesn't leave me with, because when it's everyone's responsibility, then it's no one's responsibility. And I really worry that these poor animals are going to starve to death. Let's fanfic this. Let's say Father McKay decides he's going to pick up all the pens and he brings them with him to Sister Teresa's orphanage so the kids can play with the bunnies and stuff like that. Let's
maybe his maybe his favorite mouse climbed into his pocket and he'll find him on his way back to Ottumwa.
There you go. Exactly. So, but yeah, no, whenever I hear that it's, you know, everyone's going to take care of him, like, oh, that means it's never going to get done. you know, if you've ever lived in a dorm or something with a bunch of people and it's everyone's responsibility to take the trash out, that trash ain't getting taken out.
Oh,
so,
big time.
So we then cut to Radar looking in through the door and seeing everybody's working. And then there's just a random moment where Hawkeye happens to look up and he makes eye contact. And we have a nice push in on Alan Alda as he sees Radar and they stare at each other. And they're both sort of acknowledging this is not the goodbye that they wanted. We see Hawkeye kind of look down for a moment, kind of reaching as to what to do. And then he gives Radar the most sort of sarcastic but also genuine salute possible, and Radar smiles and gives him a salute back, a very, very firm salute, gives it back. And then we hear the horn of the Jeep. We see Radar kind of look, he looks back at Radar one more time, he looks back at Hawkeye one more time, and then walks away. And Hawkeye goes back to his patient, looks up once or twice, and then goes back to work. And then
I really loved the moment where he gave a second look. I just like, there's nothing you can do, but it really does break your heart.
Yeah. It's a great, right. Cause it's like, what dialogue are you going to write? You know, what dialogue are you going to write that's going to be meaningful? Goodbye. Like, we've heard this. So it's great that you force yourself into a situation of like, what would you do with someone that you want to say goodbye to that you can't actually speak to them? You have to come up with some gesture. And so we know that. I think that Hawkeye's salute is both things. It's sarcastic, but it's also genuine because he knows that Radar, that means a lot to Radar. Radar mentions it in the beginning of the episode where he talks about that he got the Purple Heart and he's like, Ray, Hawkeye saluted me. Hawkeye never saluted anybody. So it does mean something to Radar, but Radar also knows that Hawkeye doesn't regard saluting as very meaningful. So it's both things. It's kind of
Well,
mocking
I
it, but
mean,
also not.
it's worth noting that a sincere instance of salute still kind of fundamentally attacks the entire Enterprise because he outranks Radar several times over, which is, it's good.
So then we go to we're out on the compound. We have the Jeep driver picking Radar up. The Jeep driver is uncredited, strangely, so I don't know who that actor is. He says to the guy, "Where are you from?" And he says, "Atumwa, Iowa," and he never heard of it. And then the Jeep driver just sort of gives this little aphorism. I guess anywhere you live is home. Which is a nice little, little sum up. And we see that Radar even has like a little laugh to himself, kind of like, yeah, well, this was my home because I lived here. And then he finally sits down and he says in a kind of firm voice, "I'm ready. Let's go." And he looks kind of mad in this moment. I don't know if I fully understand why,
Well,
or
his
he's just.
goodbye got stolen.
I guess so, right? Is that it's one last like I endured one last kick in the pants from the Korean War. I'm ready. Let's get out of here, kind of thing. I guess that's probably what it is. And then the camera follows Radar out of the tent. We notice there is a little bit of a mistake where in the close up where Radar is in the Jeep, we see the Best Care Anywhere sign over his head that they're going to pass through. And then in the long shot, that sign is gone. So I don't know what happened there. It must have fallen over and nobody put it back up.
Oh, wow.
So then that's the act break. That's the end of the main part of the episode. And then we come back for the little bumper. And obviously, everyone's been working all night. They walk, they pretend they're going to go on a nice long walk. BG says, "I'm going to take a walk and unwind." He says, "Oh, that sounds relaxing." And then they stop. At the swamp. Let's see what the bar is like in this place. And they go in, they start talking about where is he? Like how many flights you're gonna have to get from Korea to Ottumwa, Iowa. And he's like, "Oh, he's probably in halfway to Hawaii." And Hawkeye says, "I don't even want to think about it anymore." And they're busy at the still, and it's Potter who notices the teddy bear left on Hawkeye's bunk. And Hawkeye picks it up. They look at it mournfully and he says, "Goodbye, Radar." And then we get the sort of sad version of the suicide is pain, the even sadder version of the suicide is painless theme. And that's our episode. And so that's it. No more Radar, Lee.
Oh God, it's so sad. The teddy bear, like it really does. You spend a lot of time with Radar in this episode, and obviously he's a main character, but I don't think you've or I can't recall any other episodes that let you just sit with him in silence. It really makes you reflect on I don't know, how young he is and how big and daunting this world is for him, and how he handles it with such admirable gumption and earnestness. And also it is so crazy that he'd want to stay in such a horrible place. But of course, that is the entire sort of balancing act of MASH is a comforting sitcom you return to week after week in the worst possible circumstance, the worst period in some of these people's lives.
Think of the fact that, and we've talked about this in previous episodes. Think of the fact that Radar, as company clerk, has never had one moment of privacy for the last however many years he's been at the 477 because he sleeps in an office. Just imagine how discordant that would be to your life of never getting a moment where you have any space to yourself. Even the swamp, you're sharing it with two other guys, but you can put the you can put the tent flaps down, you can lock the door, you can at least. But Radar never. Imagine being thrown into that scenario, right? Like,
I mean, that's the thing, though. That's why this episode is so sad. He spends a significant portion of it just alone. Mm-hmm. And like, you come to understand how hard it is to make peace with your own company when that's part of it. Like, I mean, it's ego, but it's also like, I think I don't think he knows quite who he is outside of this context anymore. But the question that is posed there, like, who is Radar when he is not Radar here? And that's answered pretty definitively because he leaves that teddy bear. Like, he's a man now. He has lost all of his father figures, all of his, like, mentor figures in this case. And he has to go home and be, like, you know, the man of the house, I suppose.
Yeah. Now, of course, this is not the last time we will ever see Gary Berghoff as Radar. He would return in an episode. He would appear in a two-parter on After MASH, returning as Radar. And then following that, he even got a pilot for his own series called Walter, W'A', which makes no sense because Walter is not an acronym for anything. The pilot only aired once. And even then, it did not even run in the entire part of the country because it happened to run the same night, I believe, as one of the political conventions. It was an election year. And as the convention rolled on, it ran long. And in the West Coast markets, they decided to stick with the convention and not air the pilot. So it didn't even air in the entire country. And it was never intended to be a series. It was intended to be a series, but it was unsold. And you know, sometimes TV networks, when they've spent the money to commission a pilot, even if the show's not going to go to series, it's like, well, we spent the money. So they run it just to kind of, you know, make a couple of bucks back. And that's what they did here. Have you ever seen Walter?
I haven't. And honestly, like, I love Radar. I really do. But it does kind of baffle me that, like, they would decide to do a MASH spinoff that centers him. That seems like a really unusual choice. He seems like a rather unusual leading man.
It's not good. It's not good. It's on YouTube. Yeah, it's on YouTube. No. It's not very good. It's not very funny. He gets like a wacky girlfriend played by Victoria Jackson from Saturday Night Live. Yeah, there's a reference to Colonel Blake in it and stuff like that. And it's not very good. It just isn't. I think they're in there trying. And the idea that you would try and like After MASH was already a kind of a rickety contraption, although I think that show is underrated. I don't think it deserves the indignity that it has been given by it's completely unavailable. It's in any format anywhere officially. And I always feels like that's kind of like lets people know, oh my God, this thing must be the worst thing ever. I can't even get it anywhere. And it's not the worst thing ever, but it was a show that the network was messing with. And so then trying to kind of spin off out of an After MASH seems kind of a curious choice to try and be like, well, the spinoff isn't really working. Let's do a spinoff of a spinoff. That's not, So yeah, and that's it. That's the last time we would ever see Radar on television.
No, it does kind of, like, again, it's just sort of confusing because, like, again, I love Radar, but I'd like a leading man like him.
Yeah, he's not, yeah.
Well, I mean, and like so much of what his character is, like contextually, is this little brother figure. And gosh, so much of like what you hear about him over the like course of the series, like it is never all that optimistic. So like what does he even do? Is it him running the farm?
It contrives. He becomes a cop. I think.
No, he doesn't. No. Yeah. Stop ruining my life.
I'm
no.
sorry. I think he does. No. There's another actor. there's another actor in it named Ray Buktanica, who was a supporting player great in name. A lot of great name. He was in a lot of television shows, and him and Radar are friends, and I think they become police officers, if my memory is correct. And it is sort of just like, if you liked MASH, look, the history of, you know what? I don't even mean to like run the show down this bed because we're here to talk about Goodbye Radar, which is a great episode. No, that's not your fault. I brought it up. It is just sort of like, what about Matt? If the whole point of a spinoff is like, oh, you liked MASH. Well, here's kind of another, here's a character you loved, but we're going to put him in. It just was like, why am I watching this? Like, what is this? Why do I want to see Radar as a cop? It's just a sitcom. It's just a sitcom at that point.
Yeah, it's like, you really liked Lord of the Rings. Would you like to spend some time with Frodo while he deals with his PTSD and depression? Yeah. In this episode, he makes a cup of tea and steps outside the door.
And all of that would be fine if it was funny. And it's just not. It's just not. And it didn't sell. Mm-hmm. Now, I liked his appearances on after MASH. That was fun to see him back. I wish they had maybe made the effort to say, oh, he's with the girl he met in Goodbye Radar Part 1. That might have been kind of fun, like a bit of continuity or something. But they didn't do that either. So it's just an unfortunate thing. But here he gets a great goodbye. He gets a great goodbye.
A fantastic goodbye.
They held it over for ratings and it worked because it was a big, big, big hit. So that's Goodbye Radar. So, okay, Lee, do you have a favorite line or joke from this episode?
Let me think. Oh, I didn't think of that. Why did I not think of that? Oh, yeah. No, I totally did. And yet somehow I did not give it truly any thought. I suppose this is silly, but I really did like that. You're all right sequence. It just felt like, I know that's crazy to say, but like the inanity of it kind of made it for me because it encapsulated the entirety of the episode. It's so funny and it's so sad and it's so everything because it is so nothing.
I like how she points really at like him too. I love you. Yeah. You're yeah, I know who you're talking to. I know. Yeah. Yeah. It really is one of those things where a coworker leaves and you're like, I don't know. I've worked with you every day, but I have nothing to say to you because I don't know who you are as a person. So you're just like, good luck. It's just, you're just stuck in these, as you say, these kind of inanities. My favorite line is when Klinger is desperately trying to get Radar to help him take over as a clerk. And Radar says, I had to learn this all on my own. And then Klinger mentions the whole born clerk, born civilian, and he lists all the ways he's not suited for the job, adding that he easily loses things. And then he follows it up with, when I was a kid, my mother pinned my bike to my sleeve.
that's cute.
And that's just a great gag of any kid who grew up with their winter gloves pinned to their sleeves because they would lose them. But I love pinned my bike to my sleeve. That just made me laugh. So, it's a great episode. It's a great goodbye. It's the last goodbye the show is going to get to do because the cast is set at this point and it's not going to change up until the final episode. So, well, Lee, thank you so much for coming on and giving us a chance to hear from you, another member of MASH Bar. So thank you so much for being here.
Yeah. Appreciate the chat. This is lovely.
Do you want to tell people where they can find you out on the internet?
Sure. The name is Leah Reardon. If you'd like to hear me talk more about MASH or hear a bit more about the art project that I'm undertaking this year, I'm Frodo Gogo on tumblr.com. That's Frodo-A-Gogo .tumblr.com.
Fantastic handle. Well, thank you for coming on. It was great talking to you, and thank you all for listening. Of course, you can find all the back episodes of this show on our website, finewaterpodcast.com. You can find me over on Blue Sky under Rob Kelly Creative. And then finally, if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW podcast, and there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked in a show of your choice. So a big salute to Dennis Bailey, Daryl Clark, James Kay, Michael Kelly, David Mann, Matt McLean, Lisa P., Brady Palmer, Joe Perino, Stan Peel, Michael Porter, Nicholas Prom, Adam Sanders, Stefan Van Schaik, Britt Schramm, Billy Shulman, and Mike Thomas. So that's going to do it. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. But until then, that is all.
Where are you headed?
Ottumwa, Iowa.
Never heard of it.
Yes, anywhere you live is home.
I'm ready. Let's go.